Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
I spent decades of my life reading hundreds of afterlife communications, most of which had been received before 1950, and they were all so breathtakingly similar. It was like a treasure hunt. I didn't realize at the time that I was joining an illustrious band of scholarly researchers. We're going to visit today with one of the two greatest living scholars in the field of afterlife research. Welcome to Seek Reality. I am Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is Dr. Stafford Betty. He's a professor of religion at California State University in Bakersfield. Stafford is a true afterlife expert, and his most recent book is Heaven and Hell Unveiled, which is a terrific read, and it's not technical, and it's not too long. You'll love this book. Welcome, Stafford.
Welcome, and I hope that during this interview, we can have more of a conversation rather than me being interviewed by you, because you really know a lot about this too, Roberta. You have much to say that I'm very happy to listen to, so let's do it that way.
Well, okay, but one of the things I think is important for people to understand is, how did you start doing afterlife research? You're an expert in Eastern religions, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I came out of Fordham University with a PhD in essentially world religions with an emphasis on Hinduism and Buddhism and Chinese and Japanese religion. I found that religion is fine, and I learned a great deal from these Eastern religions, but I didn't really learn as much of what I really needed to know, and that was, you know, what happens when we die? Because life is so short, and
yes.
Eternity is so long, you know.
So long, yes. It's something I think that we all get called to in different ways, and so you were called into it because you were looking for answers in Eastern religions.
That's right.
There.
They were, they were very much more helpful than what I'd gotten from my Christian upbringing.
Sure.
But it wasn't enough, as it turned out.
Well, isn't that all right? Well, that's a way. I think everybody, as I say, who comes to it has something that sort of jogs them. And you, mm-hmm. you probably started the way I did by reading communications from the dead.
I did indeed. I actually put together an anthology of readings from all over the place, all kinds of readings, philosophical, scientific, and psychical, having to do with the afterlife, having to do with survival of bodily death. That was way back in the mid-70s that I started doing this research, and I've been doing it for a long time.
Me too. You know, you don't realize until when you look back and you say, my goodness, I've spent my whole life... talking to dead people, basically.
I know it. Reading about dead people. I've done a lot of else. I've done a lot of things, too. I've had raised children and coached my kids for 10 years in baseball and soccer and just about everything else they played. So I'm a pretty normal guy in so many respects, but I definitely have an otherworldly touch. There's no question about it.
Did it astonish you as it astonished me to find that they all had been to the same place?
It sure did, and that was one of the things that made sense to me and convinced me that this was a legitimate research topic.
It certainly is. Yeah, I think that's what first grabs us all, because I was such a skeptic, and I'll bet you were too.
You bet. I was really upset because I initially could not find answers to the question: is there life after death? I was very skeptical, and I was just unhappy about not having answers. And then they started to come, and they came fast, starting around 1975 with the publication of Moody's Life After Life. That was a big event in my life.
For all of us, we all date the advent of really good information available to the public from 1975 and Life After Life by Raymond Moody. So he's done a wonderful service.
Yes, it was a. It just it changed the world. It really did. And now we are trying to change it in a major and a bigger way. And many more people are involved in this research now, and many more books are being written about it. Very exciting stuff.
It really is. One of the things I think that we're all looking at is the fact that interest is exploding in this topic. I mean, you and I could sit around for days talking about the details we've learned, although having read your book, I have to say, I think we would be just completing each other's sentences.
We've had
the same experiences in our research. But there is such a tremendous and broad interest now. It's exciting. I feel as if, the study we've done and all the time we've put in is worthwhile because we can help people now in ways we couldn't have before.
Absolutely, and it's just such a pleasure for me to be involved in teaching my course on the meaning of death, which really is a course about, the first half is about death and dying, the second half is all about the afterlife. And my
wow,
students are just really, they are really interested in this stuff. We start out, when we do the afterlife, we start out by looking at the afterlife teachings of six major religions, and then we go to the really good stuff. And then it becomes clear, the religions, they have views that they don't really get it all, It's just not adequate. It's kind of strange. It's incomplete. It's bizarre in places. And then we get to the really good research and the kind of stuff that I write about and that you write about and we're talking about now. And everything begins to make so much more sense than it ever did before.
Well, I think it's wonderful if you're teaching young people this stuff because...
Yeah, it is. It's a pleasure.
One of the things that most distresses me is that obviously this is a complicated process. I mean, I called my book The Fun of Dying, and I got the word from the dead because it's like some of them say the most fun you ever had to go through the death and what comes right after it if they've had a reasonably good life beforehand.
Yes.
Although I want to have you talk about some of what you've discovered about people who haven't had such a good life. I mean, some of it's pretty harrowing. But the problem is people aren't prepared for it because they either have a religious view, which is not going to be at all met when they actually
die,
or they think there's oblivion. And when a lot of complicated stuff starts to happen, they're flummoxed by it.
Yep, that's exactly right. That's the spirits are telling us. And so it's helpful to know a little bit about what is probably going to happen, what is going to happen. Even though, I tell my students that, look, this is what the spirits are telling us. They're writing mostly or speaking mostly in English. They're using Western European languages. We don't get much of anything out of China, not much out of India, and it's unfortunate that we don't, but at least we're getting this from places like France and England and Brazil and Canada and the United States, and that's great stuff. But it's also incomplete. We know that we have things figured out as best as we can get them figured out here and now. But I also am quite convinced that when I die, it's going to be much more spectacular and a little bit more mysterious than anything I've been able to say or that these spirits have been able to tell us in the works that come to us down through the ages. So I know I don't have everything figured out, but I think we are in a very good place for starting.
I think so too. And what's great is there's always more to learn.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
There's always more to learn. And so this is a huge lifelong project that you can have joy in every day that you're doing it, even when, as you and I have done, where you've spent decades sort of plowing around and trying to find new communications that you can add to what your store is. This is an endless, endless story.
Yeah.
I became interested then in seeing how the science of it works, and that's a whole other area where there is so much to be done. When we get a few scientists curious enough to try to understand it and talk to us, about it from a scientist's perspective, because people shouldn't be stuck with having a lawyer doing quantum physics. That's a little strange. But I do it. I do it because I think it's important.
I know. I know. We're not exactly competent in quantum physics, but then the physicists themselves aren't either. Nobody really totally understands how it all works. We're all rather amazed
right.
at what's turning up. And
right.
all we know is that it's highly mysterious, and it opens up people to further mysteries, including what we look at. But it is interesting, and the more I read about quantum physics, the more the more I sense that maybe physics is coming around in our direction.
It's 100 years ago, actually. I'm convinced that the explosion of good afterlife communications in the early part of the 20th century
mm-hmm.
and the advent of quantum physics was not a coincidence. I think that was when this information was supposed to break into the public record, but the scientists instead stonewalled.
They did, and that's right. They did stonewall it, and they got away with it for about 75 years, but they're not getting away with it anymore in the way they used to. They're really being challenged. And from quite a few different angles, some scientists are challenging other scientists at this point. But I have a feeling that the world is tired of their old materialist dogma.
And that
smart people are very suspicious of it now and are really willing to look at books like you and I write. And they are looking at them, and they're changing. One of these days, the scientists themselves may start looking at our books, and that day may be coming pretty quickly. We'll have to see.
It's all going to happen at once. I mean, I tend to think it will happen. What will spur it will be very good communications received electronically. We already have it happening.
Uh-huh.
We just don't have it to the point where it's impossible for people to ignore it. But when lay people can call up grandma right after the funeral to get that recipe that they forgot to get while she was alive, they're not going to believe anymore when the scientists say there's no life after death. Hey, I'm eating my life after death right now. Grandma's gave me the recipe. I'm enjoying it. You tell me this isn't real. People will, at that point, I think, scientists will have to look at this stuff. But let's talk about what you've done. This book, Heaven and Hell Unveiled, when I first heard the title, Stafford, I have to say I was cranky because I have a predilection. It's such a happy story. What happens after death is beyond belief glorious. Mm-hmm. I don't like to know any bad stuff. So I didn't want to know about the bad stuff. But I have to say, having read your book, you've done a great service because people need to know these things.
Yeah, they do.
Because if we know in advance the kinds of things that can screw up our afterlife, we're going to get to enjoy the beautiful parts without having, as you know, you show some amazing remedial work people have to go through just to get up to zero.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that. People, this woman, I think her name was Marie.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Tell that story briefly because people need to know. This was a very nasty person, everyone. She was very spoiled, very rich, and jilted in love, and she decided to get even, and it turned out not to be a good idea.
It turned out to be a very terrible idea, and she suffered in the deepest part of the Shadowlands for about 20 years, Earth time, and she gets to the point of such desperation by the end of her ordeal. This is the way she ends her, she ends up, she is suffering so much that she says, "Oh, God or devil, any being of pity or remorseless cruelty, hear me and end my torments. Take me, tear me, or destroy me. Drown my reason past all hope of restitution, or by one tornadic blast of torture, put an end to feeling and terminate this agony. Hell, hell, in mercy take pity on my condition. Open your gates and let me bathe my sufferings in your fiery lake. Hell, hell, I say, in mercy open and let me in." She is undergoing something that is worse than any kind of hell she can imagine or has ever heard of. And her salvation is that she finally reaches bottom. And reaching bottom in the afterworld is a heck of a lot more damaging and difficult and painful than hitting bottom on the earth plane. And she is a woman who finally just in total desperation, calls out, and she gets help. And, of course, there's always help available.
There's help around her all along. She didn't even know she was dead. She thought awful stuff was happening.
Right. She did not.
She got to have the vision of the man that she had jilted for her own amusement, who then married someone else, and she then
Her best friend.
Them. All of that. She got to watch her lover making love to someone else, and she couldn't do anything about it.
I mean, that's right. And she really didn't understand.
Physical, yes.
Yeah, she tried to.
Psychological is worse than physical torture. This isn't hell.
Right. Exactly. And that's what hell is all about in the afterworld. It's not at all physical, of course, but it's profoundly psychological.
Yeah.
And if you've been a wicked, horrible, cruel person, your character is going to be deformed in such a way that you're going to find yourself in a hellish environment.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, it would be even more painful to find yourself in an environment where there was a divine light shining through and showing you and showing the world exactly who you were. So they generate, they gravitate towards people of their own kind, living in a world that that accommodates the kind of people that they've become.
Yeah.
And at that point, there is always the possibility of reclamation. And in this story, there is a beautiful woman spirit named Azina who takes her on, and that is how Azina grows. She is doing service to this lost soul and gradually works poor Marie back into sanity. Finally,
yeah.
Marie accepts the fact that she's really dead, that she's died, and from there it's a very difficult climb, but the climb is ultimately successful.
I think that it's important people understand that there are consequences to negative behavior, which are worse
absolutely
maybe than burning in hell, because that gives us the opportunity to change things.
Yeah,
now,
right,
when we have the opportunity to change our attitude toward life, we can do that. Because
that's right.
As you point out,
absolutely,
it's not going to redeem anybody from anything. That just does not happen.
Right. Yeah, and the thing is that the old story about heaven and hell that we're getting from Christianity, it's just not very plausible. People who are smart just can't believe it. But, you know, when you read a book like this and you see how it really works, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it'll scare the bejesus right out of you, because it really creates a sense of accountability. And I think that that's one of the most important lessons that one can learn from this kind of message from the other side. You are accountable for the things that you do. The reason is that what you do when you repeat a certain kind of behavior and it becomes habitual, your character is deformed or strengthened by that repeated behavior. You're constantly making yourself into a being who will find him or herself accountable at death and will move into an appropriate sphere where you can grow or
it's important to stress this. Jesus is real, 100%. Jesus is exactly what he claims to be, but you cannot ride his coattails. This is a natural process. It's like water finds water turns into ice, or you know, heat does certain things. This is a natural process. Jesus cannot save you on your deathbed. So
that is exactly right.
Just be aware. You've got to do it yourself, and it's not that hard. Just to choose to be good, choose to love, choose to forgive.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
There's one fellow there who hadn't not had a terrific life, but he died trying to save a child from being run over.
Yeah, yeah.
And he ends up in a beautiful situation, and
everyone
around him is revering him for that.
Right, you're right, exactly. And he wasn't a saint in life, but he was a good person. You don't need to be a saint.
Right, right.
Pardon me? Yeah.
That's exactly right. There's one woman I read about. I don't know if you've ever read about her, but she stuck in my mind. This was around the early part of the 20th century, and she had decided when she was fairly young that she was going to do one good deed every day for someone, and it would be anonymous. She didn't want people to know. And she gave herself the task that if someone discovered who had done the little thing, there were little things, not with money, but, you know, picking a rose for someone or whatever. I don't even know what she did anymore. I don't remember. But she did this for her whole life. And when she died, she was astonished to find she was the greatest celebrity that anyone had ever seen. She was revered. There were parades for this woman. All because she had tried to make people happy her whole life long in little ways. Isn't that a wonderful story?
It is, and it's true. There's a lot that I've discovered in my research for this book that involves celebration of certain types of people who have come over, who have made a humble but consistently good impact on the world. They are celebrated. And so my book looks at a few of those people. It looks at the good ones and the bad ones and people in between, and it all makes a lot of sense, all I can say. And again, the sense of accountability is stressed by these spirits, and that's one of the things. They stress other things, but that's something that we need to talk about.
Now, tell us what happens if you die with an addiction, because I think it's important for people to know that, too. It could be alcohol, could be drugs. Mm-hmm. Apparently, an addiction to sex has the same problem attached to it. Tell us.
Or just an addiction to anger. If you're a person who consistently explodes, you're just an angry person, and people around you know that you are capable of exploding over just the least little thing. That's a kind of an addiction itself. But let's talk about the addiction to alcohol. There are any number of accounts of what happens to people on Earth who are alcoholics, who are drinking, and who attract to them deceased alcoholics who drink through them, and it's really a frightening scene. You have people at a bar, and they're drinking three or four beers, and they know it's time to stop, and there's a spirit hovering around them, attaching itself or himself to this person, saying, come on, drink some more. And the reason they're not trying the deceased spirit who is drinking through the living alcoholic is not trying to destroy the person, simply trying to drink through him. So you might say that it seems as if they're describing an experience of just getting a sense of the vapors that go with alcohol and enjoying that and egging on the poor victim, trying to free himself from that next beer and leave the bar in time before he gets drunk. And here's this spirit drinking through him, egging him on. There are many stories of these kinds of addictions, and of course, that's one of the reasons why you should be careful about what you do.
Think about being that spirit. Once you die, if you have been addicted to anything, and as you point out, Stafford, even anger, if you've been addicted to something, that addiction becomes even worse, they tell us, after death. So you think you have a drink now, wait till you die, and you don't have a body with which to satisfy whatever your craving is.
Right.
There's one horrible story from an astral traveler of a whole enormous pile of naked dead people trying to have sex with one another unsuccessfully. Imagine anything that grotesque. You don't want to be addicted to anything when you die. I think that if you take nothing else away today, dear friends, please take that away. If you have an addiction now, get rid of it before you die, because it just gets worse afterwards. Now, talk about suicide, Stafford, because that's another thing that people ask me about a lot. And since I only like to talk about good stuff, I mumble. The children usually are fine, and old people or people who are dying, they don't have a problem. But you might have trouble forgiving yourself if you die in midlife. But you go into really great detail about how bad it is to be a suicide.
Well, it is. There's a long account of a 15-year-old boy here, who this is a well-known case, incidentally. One of our friends has written a whole book about the suicide of her 15-year-old son,
it's
who came
Stephen
through
lived
her.
In for a year. Stephen Lives by Ann Puryear. It is a wonderful
book. It's an important book. It was an important book for me to do research on suicide. It's a very complete story, and Ann was happy to let me tell the story in my brief way. I had to get permission from her to do this, and she graciously gave it to me. And it's very interesting to see how Stephen has reacted to the mistake that he made. He hanged himself when he was about 15 years old from a tree, and he recognized clearly, very quickly, that he had made a mistake, and he regretted it profoundly. Now, he didn't end up in some horrible hell that you might think he would. And one of the reasons is that he was not a cruel person. He was not a malformed person. He was just a desperately unhappy teenager.
Yeah.
So, you know, he is not the kind of person who's going to be hell-bound. But a person who does that has thrown away a tremendous opportunity for soul growth as a human being on a planet, on a physical planet.
Right.
And he came to realize that. And his response to it eventually was that he became a counselor to other young people who had committed suicide. He was there waiting for them when they came over. And, of course, they're coming over in droves these days. And that is his way of serving. And of course, in the afterlife, service is one of the keys to spiritual growth and advancement from one lower sphere to a higher than a higher. It's all about service.
Let's talk about that. I just want to pause briefly and say this is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch. I tell the happy side in The Fun of Dying mostly. Then read Stafford's book and you get a good balance. You can find my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. And our guest today is Dr. Stafford Betty. He's an expert at what happens at and after death. I think he and Michael Tim are the two leading experts in this field, and they write wonderful books. He gets his information from people who really know because they're talking to us from the afterlife. And what they tell us is stunningly consistent across almost 200 years of communications, all kinds of places, as you point out, Stafford, all over the English-speaking world. We get a lot of these reports, and it's all the same. It's one enormously complex and amazing place. And what happens in that place now is basically service, right? We don't go and loll around and eat grapes and or sing at the foot of God. God doesn't have feet. But what do we do? We serve there, and that's what we want to do. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, service is I mean, there are many ways to serve. You can serve other spirits. You can descend into the shadow lands and try to reclaim lost or confused or stubbornly unrepentant spirits who might be ready to change their mind and begin to recognize that they've made a mistake.
Yeah.
And there are spirits whose work is to go into what I call the trenches and try to bring these souls, these human beings, they're all formerly human, and bring them out of their dark place. And sometimes they succeed at getting them started moving in the right direction. That's just one of the ways of serving. There are many, many ways of serving. There are just thousands of ways of serving. By serving, I mean people over there have jobs to do. They're very, very busy people. It is a place of great busyness. It's not a lolling around, sitting around type of experience at all. You're not enjoying the beatific vision of God unchanged for eternity. You've got things to do.
On one hand, though, you are in a way because you're seeing the glorious process of spiritual growth. To me, that is going to be beautiful to contemplate.
Absolutely.
It's important for people to understand, too, that when we talk about service, we're not saying, you know, you'll have to take a number and they're going to assign you whatever number happens.
Very true.
you choose what resonates with your deepest heart, that what you can do for other people that will make you happiest as you help them, and that's what you choose. And it doesn't have to be just one thing. If you feel called to something else, you can do that. It's I look forward to that so much, because
I do too.
You don't have to earn a living. You don't have to eat. You don't have to sleep. You can spend all your time enjoying love, the love of other people, and giving it and receiving it. Wow.
Yeah, it is. It's great. And it's interesting. You know, I spoke of one kind of service, the service of that I think many spirits talk about, and that is to go into the dark places and try to help their unredeemed brothers to begin moving toward the light. But there's a completely different kind of service. And it's really amazing that some spirits talk about the desire to help the universe run better. We're talking about people who have a kind of cosmic vision of the service that they want to give. I mean, it's made me wonder all kinds of amazing things. You know, are spirits involved in getting us out of our planetary scrapes in some way?
I don't know, but it would
be consistent if that were the case. Now they don't have infinite power. They're not omnipresent. They don't have. In other words, if we were to ask them for help, and I do ask my spirit guides and spirit guardians for help from time to time, they would probably be willing to help, but their power is very limited. You might say that's why prayer doesn't always work, because you know they're not omnipotent beings, but they do have a certain amount of loving power, and they can telepathically help us to come to solutions that we might think we're coming to on our own, but we might in fact be getting a little nudge from them telepathically.
Everybody has spirit guides. There's no question. Yep. Usually multiple. If you're involved in something where there's interest on the other side, as they say, turns out I have 11. I have just discovered that because I'm doing stuff I'm doing. But what I do is, if there's something confusing me, or if I come to a block in my writing, I just put that out and go to sleep. I wake up in the morning and the answer's always there, Stafford.
Right.
Because I'm not psychic, but we do travel out of our bodies during the night, and we consult with our guides and maybe get hit upside. I've been hit upside the head by my guides a few times, and known it when I get up in the morning. I did something they didn't like. So this is going on for everybody. It's just important to be sensitive to it, because when you're working in harmony with your guides, your life goes so much better.
Yeah. You know, one thing I should say, though, is that persons who are stubbornly resistant to the light here on Earth, people who really want nothing to do with spirituality or progress and basically are just wasting their lives, their spirit guides will not tolerate that forever. They will simply let the person alone because they're not being helpful. They're not being allowed to be helpful, and so they do something else. And that's why a lot of people find themselves without help from the spirit world, because they've resisted so long that they have lost their spirit guides.
See,
I know whole families who seem to have things happen to them bad all the time, and
but
others who are always blessed.
I don't like bad stuff. Don't talk.
I know.
All right, so someone is listening to us talk, who's saying, oh my goodness, I realize that I want a happy afterlife because that's a whole lot longer than my life here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to turn my life around. Are you telling me my spirit guide just has absolutely left me because I'm 47 and I've been lousy all my life? They've just given
Not
up.
At all. As soon as you resolve to make any kind of an attempt to come back to decency, then the spirit guide is there. It's like the spirit guide always has, you might say, just a telephone call away, keeps track. Okay? And so all it takes is for a little bit of meeting the spirit guide halfway, and then she's back on duty. But
okay.
She has a life to... She has a life to live.
Yeah, who are these people? Explain who the spirit guides are that are helping us.
Oh, they're former human beings. Most of the time, they are people who understand the problems and the challenges of Earth because they've been there, and
yes.
they know what we're going through. And that's what we mean by a spirit guide, a former human being who is relatively advanced, but not greatly advanced, because those who are greatly advanced are pretty much out of sight. We don't hear from them. But
yeah.
those who are still working at progressing on their own, often do that by becoming spirit guides and guardians. Now, that doesn't mean that's all they do in the afterlife. There's plenty of time for fun and even joking and laughing. They have a great time. There's a lot of entertainment over there. But, you know, they have jobs to do, just as we have jobs to do.
Yes.
And one of their jobs, a very common job, is to be a spirit guide or guardian.
I understand, everyone, too, that to be your spirit guide is a big responsibility. They don't take it on lightly.
That's right.
They never leave us. They don't take a day off or even an hour off. I mean, if they've given up on you, which I guess I don't like that idea, but if they have,
well, I've read just that kind of an account that it does happen.
Oh Lord!
Yeah.
Well, I don't read. I only read the good stuff. But when I had my experience of light when I was 8, when I woke up and realized there was no God and saw the light, and the voice said, "You wouldn't know what it is to have me unless you knew what it is to be without me. I'll never leave you again." It took me 50 uh-huh. years to realize that had been my guide. He wanted
uh-huh.
me to know he was there.
Uh-huh,
and it's
uh-huh.
only in the last few months I've actually met him. I have
uh-huh.
he's helped me all my life, and he's just that's how they are. They help us
uh-huh.
get through this life with the best possible experiences, not happy necessarily experiences,
right.
but experiences of spirit growth, experiences mm-hmm. that are going to help us to be really more advanced when we get back than we were when we left.
Yeah, you know, most of our prayers are not answered because most of the prayers are seen by our spirit guides and guardians to be unwise. They are well aware that what we find burdensome and sad is just part of the environment that is needed before there can be spirit growth. And so they tend not to answer our prayers, not because they're unfeeling, but because they don't want to do all the work that we need to do for ourselves.
One of the things that I tell people, and I think this is an analogy that's helpful, is think of your whole lifetime as just an afternoon at the gym. And all those things that are obstacles, you see as obstacles in your life, are just the machines that
mm-hmm.
that you're getting on to strengthen those spiritual muscles.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't come and do, you know, have those experiences, you'd be lying around on a sofa spiritually.
I know.
You know, you'd be flabby as all get out. Spiritually, and what
you really would
do is grow.
Right.
So, you know, your awful ex-husband or the boss you can't stand, all those things, those people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the worst people that we think are in our lives, when we get there and the party is held, because we all have a party after we get back, when the party is held, we realize that guy we couldn't stand or that horrible person was one of our best eternal friends. They took on that role in our lives. It's so confusing if you don't understand this is what's going on.
Uh-huh.
But you have a group of people that you're very, very close to. Most of them aren't in bodies now, and some of them in
uh-huh.
bodies you don't particularly like. But
mm-hmm.
but they're helping you have these experiences in your life, which are going to make such a difference when you get there if you do them right.
Yeah. I like that. I'm glad we're having this conversation. I don't feel interviewed.
Well, I should be interviewing you, actually, but this is
no.
This is
much better.
I always visit. It's fun for you and for me, I know, to talk to people who have done a lot of this research, because each of us has found a tidbit or two the others maybe haven't come across yet, and we've
yeah.
drawn conclusions, and the conclusions are always the same, which is what is really wonderful to me. But sometimes somebody has a wrinkle that you hadn't thought of, and you say, that's good. I mean, I've picked up wonderful insights from other people who have done this research. That's a great thing. So
indeed.
What surprises you most about the afterlife, Stafford?
Oh, you know, what what surprises me most? I should be able to answer that question. I really should, and nothing comes to mind right away. Wow. Yeah, I don't know why I can't think of the answer to that question.
What surprises me. What
go ahead.
What surprises me is that God is all the people in the afterlife. We think if we pray to God, God is going to, you know, take time out of his busy day, although we say
yep.
he, and do something for us. And people are confident that they're a personal God. Well, that personal God is really these wonderful, wonderful people who, like you, have a mind that is part of God, and they're God's helpers. They're helping you have the answers to prayer or comforting you or being
yes.
your guide or whatever. But that surprised me a lot at first.
Yeah, it did me too, as a matter of fact. I had difficulty dealing with that at first, as a matter of fact. One of the most remarkable accounts of God came to me or came to us through the great American philosopher William James. I don't know if you've read that remarkable book that came through the spirit, through the medium. What is her name? Roberts. Jane Roberts is her the Seth person.
I haven't read Seth, but
okay.
or anything channeled that late.
Right.
I always thought it was probably just done to make a buck, and people tell me I'm stupid about it. But I haven't read Seth. I haven't read Abraham. There are several like that that I have not.
Yeah, well, you know, Seth is not my favorite afterlife character, but Roberts is. She brought through William James, and you might say, oh, come on, William James would never stoop to come through any kind of a medium. This great man. No, the writing style of the character who came through Roberts is amazingly like his, and the depth, the philosophical depth, the psychological circuitry is just amazing, and I love it when he starts talking about this. What does he call it? This it's a kind of an ambience about the afterlife, a kind of light that a kind of a spiritual light that is just that penetrates the afterlife
yeah.
environment, and it feels very personal. It feels loving and knowing,
yes.
and that's the kind of God that one meets in the other world. There's
yeah.
no God sitting on a throne. You're not going to see any kind of a God. If you saw God, you'd be very disappointed, because God is much beyond any kind of vision that we can even imagine.
Yeah.
So God is not going to be encountered particularly at the low level that we'll find ourselves in soon after death, but there is this incredible spiritual light that is the ambience of the lower heavens that I think of as being as much of the divine as we can deal with. And so it's not as if God is absent, but God is not sitting on sort of a throne.
There's nothing that's not God, basically, in the afterlife, even in the lowest levels. As you say, Jesus called it the outer darkness, and you call it the Shadowlands. It's an area which is really bad in every possible way, but it's not a fiery hell. Unfortunately, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, it is indeed. And they're all kind of levels also. It's not as...
Yeah, but even there, God is still there. God, we choose to exile ourselves from the love of God, but God then is always sending people in to help us, to try to reach us, as you point out, even get our attention and help us aspire to something better. God doesn't lift us up. We've got to do that ourselves, but God gives us every possibility to see the a bit of light and to grow. And that's really... I don't know. Everything that you learn about it is so tender and loving.
Yeah.
As you point out, too, here people, you know, love to watch a train wreck. There, what people cheer and love is moments of insight and joy that maybe somebody is walking out of the Shadowlands and into
yeah,
a better
exactly.
place.
Right.
As Jesus said, there's greater rejoicing over one person who sort of turns his life around than there is over 100 people who had to do that. And that's true. Yeah. That's exactly what he was talking about.
Yeah, it is. And Marie is a great example of such a person. Quite so. And I think that when you ask me what is surprising, that's one of the things that surprised me. The reason I couldn't answer your question right away is because I've become so used to thinking of God in this way. But when I first came across it, I found it really quite, I didn't know what to do with it. I wasn't exactly attracted to it, but I certainly didn't find it off-putting. Now it makes perfect sense to me. I have a... So that's surprising, and I'm sure there are other things that are surprising. They were surprising to me when I came across them that I've forgotten how I felt about them at the time.
When we've been doing decades of research,
it
sort of all goes into the hopper and form.
It does.
An atmosphere, a sense, and then if something comes along that I'll tell you one of the things that really, really surprised me. When I was doing this research, one of my big questions was, so is it solid there? I wanted to know. And that was something that nobody asked. And if somebody 100 years ago hadn't asked that question, it would never, nobody answered a question that didn't get asked. And, of course, we can't sit back there 100 years ago and ask our question. It took me a while to come across someone who had said to a relative, so is it solid? And the relative got all huffy. It's more solid here than it is there.
Right.
I said, phew, thank you for asking the question.
Right. That reminds me right away of two of the most surprising things now that you've mentioned that. One of them was, where is the afterlife? I had a problem with that. How in the world can there be an afterlife? Where in the world is it? I mean, it doesn't do just to say it's in some other dimension. That really is too abstract for me to deal with. Where the heck is it? And I kept reading that the afterlife is all around Earth. It's just all around us.
It's right here.
It's right here. And that is so amazing, and it makes all this sense. And so I find the spirits telling us over and over again that they're right around us, that I get the sense that the Earth is kind of the nucleus, and that there are these spaces that extend out from the Earth. And the higher you get, the farther you get away from Earth, the higher you are in the hierarchy of spirit. And I had that sense that Earth is where you become born, and that you keep growing, and you grow beyond it into the realms of spirit, and those realms keep going outward and outward. So it really makes sense at last to think that when you look up to heaven, you really are doing the right thing.
Yeah, and we as your spirit communicators in your book say, and as we know from others, it's what they have to do to communicate with us well is to lower their personal vibratory rate, which is not easy for some of them. It's
very difficult for almost all of them.
Yeah. So these things, one of the things people will say to me, well, there's no afterlife, or we would know more about it than we do. Very difficult to make communication happen. The fact that we have as much as we have is really a miracle.
Yeah, it is. And it is remarkable that there have been so many spirits who have taken upon themselves the task of informing generations of human beings about where they are now and where we will soon be. And it's amazing how my friend Mike Tim, you mentioned Michael, he keeps coming up with these treasures that were published long ago, and he just keeps discovering them. And he's been a great help to me in discovering some of the best sources from 100 years ago. Just an enormous number of books about the afterworld came from, particularly from Britain, from the British Isles, between 1880 and about 1930.
That's the heyday. This gentleman's name is Michael Tim, T-Y-M-N, and everything he writes, everything he touches, is gold. So I urge strongly that I'm going to have him on at some point too. The problem is he's in in Hawaii, so yeah. The time differences are a little tricky, but he's one of my heroes.
He is. He's one of mine, too. He's my greatest single helper, as a matter of fact. Michael is a little less interested in describing the afterworld than I am. What he is really good at is generating accounts from the other world that are full of what he calls evidential. Evidential communication. He is just brilliant at what he's been able to bring to the question of how do we know that these spirits are legitimate? How do we know that they're real? How do we know that all of this isn't just some sort of projection by the medium, coming from the subconscious mind of the medium? He is really concerned about those kinds of questions, and he has compiled evidence that leaves no doubt in anyone's mind if they're open.
His body of work is going to be celebrated for a very long time. I'm
so
sad that we're coming to the end of this time. We're going to need to do this again. Unfortunately, this is a wonderful book. Please read Heaven and Hell Unveiled by Stafford Betty. And anything that Stafford writes is also wonderful. What I do is summarize what he and Michael do is really dig in and give you the words of the dead themselves. Quite beautiful. This has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you fully grasp all the implications of that fact, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. For one reason, it'll change it for the better, is you'll stop doing bad stuff because you don't want to end up in the outer darkness any more than I do. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free on iTunes. Just seek on Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own books, of course, are The Fun of Dying and The Fun of Staying in Touch. And you'll find details about all my books and my blog. Please read my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest next week will be Carol Morgan with her beautiful son, Mikey. Mikey Morgan died when he was 20, and only then did he let his mother know that he's a sixth-level being, very high-level being. And he chose a brief earth life and an early death so he could reaccustom himself to what it is to be a human being so he could communicate through her. Carol swears she never would have signed up for this, but he insists to her that she did. And they are really terrific. You're going to love them both. So please join us next week. And this week we've been speaking with the wonderful Dr. Stafford Betty. He's one of the world's foremost experts on the afterlife, and as I've said, his latest book, Heaven and Hell Unveiled, is a must-read. It's quick, it's easy, it's enjoyable, and it is so packed with information you won't get anywhere else. One of the facts you'll come away with when you read his book is something that really has been striking me, too, as I've done this research. The dead tell us repeatedly that the standard for living our lives is a whole lot higher than anything we can imagine when we're here. That standard is perfection, or as close as we can get to perfection. And it's the little things that count the most sometimes. Knowing that, isn't it time for you right now to resolve to be a kinder, wiser, gentler, more helpful person? Whatever your age, it's not too late for you to resolve that from this moment on you're going to do things right. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.